with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You showed me how to do exactly what you do, how I fell in love with you. You walk into a room and people fall for you, how I wanna be like you.
Sales Pavilion, and they're going to be back at the Jump Centers around the Eastern Seaboard, and it comes back around this weekend. There was some point to point, and things were just getting kind of underway last weekend. But we welcome back Bill Gallo. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are we doing?
Terrific. Down in Ocala, and thoroughly enjoyed being here again this year for the March sale, but I wasn't going to let the week slip by without a visit with you and get everybody excited about the chase season.
Great. I'm glad you thought of us. We're just about to kick off our 2023 campaign. We're pretty excited ourselves. We're looking forward to a really big year in steeplechasing in America. Horse inventory is good. The race meets have rebounded from the pandemic, and they seem to be in really good order. So we started Aiken on Saturday, Aiken, South Carolina, where they're going to kick off our season. And it was just announced this week they're also going to close out our season on November 18th. So that was actually pretty good news. Aiken is a relatively new, couple of years old race course. They transitioned from their former racetrack in Aiken, or turf course in Aiken, and they've moved over to this property that's terrific race course. Our horsemen have embraced it. So we're really looking forward to it. We start out with some small fields, but that's to be expected. That's pretty typical. Takes some of our outfits that are wintered up in the north a little bit longer to get ready. But it's a good, solid program. Plus the pre-sales in the Aiken community is huge. They're expecting anywhere from 25 to 30,000 on opening day. And then we move on to Camden, South Carolina next week. And they had 30,000 last spring. So they're bursting at the seams as well. So the sport is in good condition, real healthy right now. really excited, looking forward to a tremendous season.
Well, of course, the spring portion of the calendar, which starts in the Carolinas and kind of, you know, dots around a little Virginia, a little Maryland, a little North Carolina, a little bit of everything, and then we work our way up to the racetracks, and certainly look forward, of course, to the summer. I got to think that the expanded Colonial meet, and the way it's going to continue to expand, that's good news for chasing too.
Yeah, we've firmed up our summer program already, and it is terrific. It is expanded. We are going to have two jump races, or Colonial is going to host two jump races every Friday. We're going to be a part of the Paramutual program. You'll be happy to hear that.
Yes.
So we are the first and second races every Friday for nine consecutive Fridays. So that's going to complement our beautifully dovetail into our Saratoga program, which is the normal one race every Wednesday at Saratoga. So it's one race every Wednesday at Saratoga, two races every Friday at Colonial. And then, of course, typically we kick off the fall season at Aqueduct, or normally Belmont, but once again, it'll be at Aqueduct. And Naira's kind enough to host those two important stakes races, the Enemin and the Lonesome Glory, which are key prep races for the Far Hills Championship Day. So our summer program is stout. We write different types of races, a lot of maiden races, lower-rated handicap races at Colonial, and then of course we have our top tier horses, first level allowance, novice horses, and grade one stakes horses at Saratoga. So we're real happy about that as well. So I mean, looking down through the fall, we're, you know, expecting once again the race meets to did very well last fall, going to do even better this coming fall. So we're going to be hovering around a record post level somewhere in the vicinity of $6 to $6.5 million for the year, which is quite a bit for us. So all good news on our end.
Well, and that's particularly helpful because the purse levels and the cancellations and all the things that pandemic kind of wrought on all of racing, but it particularly hit the chase community in some ways harder, because you count on the, you know, not on the necessarily the live gate. I mean, certainly the organizations that host the races count on the gate, because invariably they've got fundraising associated with it. But it's a different situation. You couldn't just run the races without anybody there. It just wasn't going to work the way it did at the racetrack.
Absolutely. We're almost solely dependent on attendance and sponsorship. So during the pandemic, obviously, without the ability to gather a crowd, most of our race meets did not run in 2020. But we've slowly gotten back on our feet. It's miraculous, quite frankly. Our horsemen stood behind us. The association itself stepped up in a big way. And the seven or eight meets that actually ran in 2020 without fans, it made a huge effort financially and emotionally for our people. But I can tell you the game is healthy right now. We've got some couple of major stables. Leslie Young, our defending champion trainer, and Kerry Breon are going to go battle it out again this year. And don't count out Jack Fisher. He's got a pretty stout stable himself. So many owners have gone out and got more stock. So we're in a good position right now. I'm very optimistic. Our board of directors is very optimistic. We've had a lot of good winter meetings, and we're ready to rock and roll. So really looking forward to Saturday and beyond.
Well, Aiken Saturday got a nice six race card, and the fields are fine. There's a couple of eight horse events, the Bostwick and the Bird. Couple of five horse fields as well, and is there a Timber?
No, it's not a Timber. The feature race is actually an added race. It's a 35,000 4-year-old restricted race. We knew it was going to be a small field. We didn't know that Kerry Breon would nominate five horses. She was the only trainer to nominate, which was interesting. She ended up entering three of the five. So it's all Kerry Breon, much like a Bob Baffert type race in California. But it's a quality race, believe it or not. Those three horses, they competed against each other on closing day last fall at Charleston. There was a little mishap at the last. A topic changer ended up winning it almost by default. But it's the Insider is a quality horse that galloped at Far Hills on championship day in that three-year-old race there. Intriguing finale on the day, even though it's a small field, it's a competitive field. And of course, you know, the connection there, too, is an important connection. The Wyckoff family,
yep.
Kirk Wyckoff and Three Diamond Farm, and his son, Jordan. Jordan is married to Frank Mullins' daughter, and Frank Mullins is the president of the Aiken Steeplechase. And Frank just took over the leadership of Aiken Steeplechase both spring and fall, and they've got some big plans, and the future should be very, very bright at Aiken.
You know, you mentioned the presence of Three Diamonds and the Wyckoffs, who were, you know, most familiar to the flat community. But I'm looking at the Conger, which goes as the fourth race. Three Diamonds has got Girl Dad. Jordan has got Summer Anthem. How about Gary Barber, who's all in now on the jump scene, Finding Freedom with Kate Dalton? There's a lot more crossover, and it seems like, you know, every time we go to Far Hills or, you know, when I have people come up to me and say, you know, I got involved in a chase horse, and, you know, Sean Clancy's done a great job attracting people, and, you know, with River D. So there's more and more of a crossover and trickle down tie-in to the flats.
Well, there's no question. And, the quality of horses is dramatically better. I mean, we're getting really quality horses to transition over the jumps. Across Border is, you know, he's a $1 million earner on the flat, and New York bred, everybody kind of knows who he is. And, you know, that's a Three Diamonds horse that's going to run in the second race, which is an interesting race. If you look at it, it's a maiden starter. We just started riding these hurdle races last year, and they were popular among the horsemen, horses that have started on the flat or over jumps for 20,000 or less. Believe it or not, Cross Border did at one point in his career run for 20,000, which made him eligible for the race. But those are the types of horses we're getting. Girl Dad, Cross Border, and the Barber horse went to the Daltons. The transition has been increasing in volume. And I think some of those major flat owners are seeing an opportunity with some of their horses. Our purses are pretty solid. When we get to Colonial Downs, we're actually going to be racing Maiden Special 40,000, which is, you know, a good number for us. So plenty of opportunity and plenty of interest from a lot more of those flat guys.
Well, in addition, on Saturday, the season kicking off at Aiken, then Sunday they'll go to Unionville, Pennsylvania, and Cheshire as well. And then next week, Carolina, for the Carolina Cup, refashioned as an early season event. Moncton and Tryon, on and on. The Grand National at Butler for the Timber and... the season, you know, right? The all Fox Field. I'm just looking at the calendar. The Maryland Dunn Cup.
Yeah, our season transitions from south typically to north. We follow the better weather, so we're down here in South Carolina to kick it off, and we'll spend a couple of weeks down here, and then we one more week in the south at Tryon, North Carolina, and then we head up while those Maryland Timber Classic races, the Manor, the Grand National, the Maryland Hunt Cup, those three, they run back-to-back-to-back in April. Those are historic races for the Timber horses. They jump the bigger post and rail fences, but, and you know, they were up in Virginia for the Classic Virginia Gold Cup on Derby Day. And of course, our spring championship day is Iroquois out in Nashville on the 13th of May. And that's that could be something else. We're still hoping that Hewitt shows up. He made some indicated after his fall at Cheltenham. The trainer, Shark Hanlon, did mention something about the possibility of coming to Nashville. And that's, of course, the horse that won the Grand National last fall at Far Hills. So that would be pretty good. They bumped the purse up to $200,000. So that typically gets some international attention. So we're sitting on go. I expect nothing but a good season ahead, and really appreciate you thinking about us and making people aware of it. Now, we've got a couple of other really interesting things, Steve. You'll love this. You know, we've hooked up with Stable Duel. And we've created some contests. It's not gambling. These are contests on a weekly basis with cash prizes. And we've got 9 of our 16 race meets hooked into the Stable Duel game. And we're going to play it starting the 15th of April. On that particular day, you can play the My Lady's Manor card and the Try-On card individually. And it's a simple game. It's a fun game. You pick a 10-horse stable. It's like fantasy football, basically. But there's no cost. There's no entry fee. We've got free live streaming all year this year. So it's a nice complement to what we're doing. We're going to reach a lot more people, hopefully get people playing Stable Duel, hopefully getting people more interested in the actual racing product. And I think that's going to bode well for us. And I think it's going to help as we enter Saratoga and Colonial, where you actually can wager on the races.
I love it. Let me, include me in any dissemination of info, and we'll beat the drum.
We're going to have a big social media blast about the whole thing. It's right in your wheelhouse. And,
cool.
I think it's $2,000 in prizes for the day, $500 to the winner, the stable with the most points. Fun game to play, and looking forward to that as well.
Excellent. That is fun and exciting, and I imagine that listeners will latch right onto it. Very cool.
And there's one other thing I should mention. It's a live stream every, actually two live streams, either Thursday night or Friday. We're going to have Megan Connolly, who does a lot of our commentating, and she's hosting a show and is going to go over the entries. Actually, the first show is Friday. She's going to host the show Friday about opening weekend, and then come back before the April 15th Stable Duel kickoff, and she's going to actually handicap the card for the 15th when we start Stable Duel, those multiple cards, but Manor and Try-On. So that's a new little wrinkle. If you don't know much about the jumpers, you can get it right on our website. You click on our website, and it's going to be taped, so you don't have to get the live version. But if you need some insights, and you're playing Stable Duel, or you're just an interested, curious fan, Megan presents a beautiful commentary and goes over the card at each place.
Oh, good. Well, maybe some of those abstaining Eclipse voters might tune in and learn a thing or two.
Yeah, I understand. It is what it is. I can understand their perspective. It is somewhat frustrating. But listen, if we get more exposure through social media, through the Steve Bick Show, through Saratoga and Colonial, now being simulcast all over the country, let's hope that some of those turf riders and voters engage a little bit more and follow us a little bit better. It's not their fault. It's our fault. But we're going to do a better job of it now moving forward.
Bill Gallo, everybody, nationalsteeplechase.com, the website last year reimagined, and everything you need is there to follow the season, the entries, the results, the tallies of owners, trainers, jockeys. You can also follow on Twitter, Jumpin' with USA, and all the other, some of the big outfits. In fact, I just slapped a like on something Sean Clancy just put out, River D, with City Dreamer getting back into action. We love to feature the jump scene. And, Bill, best of luck to everybody, all the sets of connections, the stakeholders, riders, and everybody in your organization.
Thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate it, and I hope to talk to you later in the spring.
Without fail. Bill Gallo, everybody, and just ready to go. Aiken kicks it off. And, you know, almost each of the Hunt Meet organizations have their own Twitter. And should really do a compendium of all of them, because I follow most of them. And, like the Iroquois, certainly, and I think Carolina Cup has. Let me see if Aiken. I don't know if Aiken does. And what's tricky is sometimes you got to kind of search around a little bit to figure it out. But there's some, there's stops. You can plan your visit. Go to nationalsteeplechase.com for starters and look at the schedule, particularly in the spring, and the Virginia Gold Cup, for instance, it's Derby Day, is the one hiccup. But the Gold Cup in the spring, and then in the fall, you have the option of going to the International Gold Cup in October, right before. That's right the week before, or 2 weeks before Far Hills. Far Hills, if you've never been and you want to be overwhelmed immediately, there's so many choices. There's so many great options in Maryland and Virginia, any of the other locations as well in Virginia. And that would just be satisfied seeing it at the racetrack, which you're going to do a lot more going forward at Colonial. And it's really perfect, actually, that the Colonial meets are going to continue to grow, because in a lot of ways it's the cradle of of the Hunt meets and the steeplechase. Yeah, but that's not fair. Maryland, certainly Maryland, let's call it a corridor from Pennsylvania to Maryland to Virginia. That's the cradle of steeplechase civilization. Let's turn our attention to some handicapping work. And I got to get Jeff Franklin in here. We're going to run into trouble. I got to somehow shoehorn Jeff and Paul Umbrello and Rich Ang and Michael Blowen into this hour. All right. We've had the long form opening today with Dean DiRenzo, but I wasn't going to just pull him up. That was too good to pass up. So here we go. Let's get Jeff in here, and we will pick up the Thorograph conversations. And we're going to do these on Thursdays. And Jeff, of course, has had a long association with Thorograph, and he joins us now. Jeff Franklin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How goes?
Very good. I've been here at Ocala all week, and each morning has been like has gone at breakneck speed. So this has been no different.
Well, that's kind of a mini cradle of horse racing down there too. It's always a lot of fun to go down there with so much action and to see some of the future stars, right before your feet, and then 2 years later you're betting on them when they load in for the Derby, right?
Well, great. You might be at the very least they'll pop up somewhere, and we'll see about in pretty quick, pretty short order. I mean, you got April is going to hit us, just literally in 3 weeks. They come right back here and sell another swath of babies. And Keeneland, Keeneland is what? Today's the 23rd. What are we? We're 2 weeks away from Keeneland. A week from, I think,
right.
It opens a week from Friday. Is that right?
Yeah, the 7th, I believe.
Unbelievable. All right. I I'm a victim here of all this travel and kind of losing track of how, you know, it's amazing to look up and to think that we're, you know, we're this close. I mean, we're you know, 5 weeks away from the start of the Triple Crown season. I mean, by all rights, now is the Triple Crown season, when we have preps like the Louisiana Derby on Saturday and the Jeff Ruby and the Sunland on Sunday. This is, you know, this is the weekend that sort of transitions into high gear. And of course, I haven't really followed the Winter Carnival at Dubai this year at all, but there'll be points given away in the UAE Derby on Saturday morning as well.
Yep, that's right.
Jeff, before we dive into a couple of races each week, you know, we started this about a month ago. We got one session in, and now resuming with Jeff. Give everybody a reminder, because there's so many different things. I mean, hell, we could do a segment just on your career around the game alone with the different things that you've experienced. But, you know, you haven't been on the show with me in a couple of years. Remind everybody about your resume and all the ways in which you've impacted the game.
Happy to, see, you know, you live long enough, you get an opportunity to do a lot of things. So I was a horse owner, actually a petroleum engineer turned horse owner, and through a strange series of events became a jockey's agent. And I was really lucky. I represented Gary Stevens, Pat Valenzuela, Jose Santos, Robbie Davis, a bunch of guys. I won the Derby in 88, winning colors. So you see, I am long in the tooth. Won a number of Breeders' Cups, and Gary set an all-time record at a single meet winning. I got really lucky, and it was just something I loved to do, and it stayed with me to this day. Curiously, after my jockey agent days were over, I was approached by some guys who wanted to start up this new company, which eventually became YouBet.com. We became the largest online bettor in North America. I eventually became president of the company. So I've been doing ADW work for almost 30 years. And through a series of twists and turns, I helped Naira set up Naira Bets, and eventually helped put together a partnership between Thoroughgraph and Naira Bets. It's actually not a partnership. We call it a joint venture or an affiliate deal. But the idea is that if you have a Thoroughgraph account and a Naira Bets account, we link the two of them together behind the scenes, and we give you all sorts of neat stuff. You know, great rebates, free Thoroughgraph sheets in some occasions, on-track amenities, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a pleasure to be on your show, to be going over some of the Thoroughgraph data for a couple of races we chose on Saturday, in the hopes the guys will go to the website. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, anybody who goes to the website in advance, just throw in your email. You'll see a little box there that says Thoroughgraph at the races. And the races that we're going, the Thoroughgraph sheets for the races we're going over, is automatically emailed to you. So to some of the listeners who haven't done it yet, you can go do it right now. And in 1 minute, you'll have the sheets that we're talking about, and you can follow right along and, you know, hopefully, you know, become kinds of, you know, view things through the Thoroughgraph prism, as Steve, I know you do, and I have since the Gary Stevens days.
Well, in fact, Gary Stevens is the linchpin to my introduction to Thoroughgraph, which was an article that Jerry wrote in the Racing Form in 95. I was already a Thunder Gulch fan, and Jerry just reinforced it, but he also managed to include Tejano Run and Timber Country for those that that may not have cashed the trifecta that year in the Derby. That was the first time I even came to know what the Thoroughgraph existed, and I literally have used it since. So what does that make? 27 years.
There you go. So how do you want to do this for the two races we selected? You want to start off, and you'll be Johnny Carson, I'll be Ed McMahon, or vice versa?
No, it's a little bit of a discussion. You actually picked both of these races, and I just sort of agreed because one turf, one dirt, let's do it chronologically, and the Fairgrounds card starts with the Statebreds and the Mile and a 16th Crescent City Derby, and you were excited about this race, and we haven't talked about it yet. I'm anxious to see what you landed on, what you came up with.
Okay, great. So, again, we're talking about Saturday's races, the first race. And the reason I was so interested in two of these races is they pointed out value that Thoroughgraph can give the handicapper, but for entirely different reasons. And the first race is really all about which horse is developing. These are just turned three-year-olds. And I think the mistake too many people make is that they assume that horses have static talent. That is, what we saw yesterday is what we'll see in 3 weeks.
Yep.
And it's au contraire. You know, horses are always developing. They're teenagers turning young men when they're three-year-olds. And the sheets really help to expose the kind of hidden development that may be lurking out there. And as bettors, we can take advantage of that. So this one, to me, was an ideal situation for a couple of reasons. Why don't we start with really the favorite in the race, who's the five horse, All Night Moonlight. Nice horse. He ran an eight. And by the way, for those people who aren't familiar with Thoroughgraph, the lower the number, the better. Contrary to other speed ratings, where the higher the number, the better. With Thoroughgraph, the lower the number, the better. So this horse ran an eight as a two-year-old and then had three route races. He ran an eight, an 18, a 13, and a 10. So what does that mean? Something that a lot of folks have heard but don't really understand is bouncing. So the idea is when an athlete, in this case a racehorse, exerts a great deal of energy, they will often regress and require recovery time. Now, in human beings, anybody who's gone to a gym and went to the squat rack and piled on too much weight the first time and tried to walk 6 days later knows exactly what I'm talking about. But in horses, if we're not talking days, excuse me, we're talking often weeks, months, even half years to recover from an effort. Horses are incredible in that they just lay it on the line. And so in a horse like All Night Moonlight, he ran that eight, he's yet to get back to that eight. And the question is, when will he do it? So if he won, would we be surprised? As you'll see in a minute, the eight's a good solid number for this field. He's a deserving favorite, but I think we'll be betting against him. So if we go down and Steve, feel free to chime in if there's anything sure. You think I'm going too quickly on or whatever. But so there's a great example in the eight horse, late September, who will be 5-1 according to the morning line. He ran some spectacular numbers. He actually ran better as a baby. He ran a 6.25 just in December, sprinting. And then they tried stretching him out at Delta. He ran an 18, a horrible regression after a couple of sprints. That's the kind of bad bounce that Thoroughgraph guys don't like to see. If a horse is developing and evolving and getting faster and stronger, you want to see a more orderly progression from the starting point through their three-year-old year. And so, again, the theme of this race is a horse developing or is a horse regressing or has he stabilized? In this case, I think he's kind of been somewhere in late September in regression to stabilization mode, hasn't come back to that six, and you know, it's going to have a little bit more work to do. So here's two pretty live horses, according to the morning line, that I'm tending to fade, quite frankly. And the third of the four horses we'll talk about is Mangum. He's the seven horse. He ran a nine early on, regressed, bounced to a 17. It was a sloppy track, came right back to the nine, which is a good sign. Came right, you know, it was as if we can throw out the sloppy race, and then regressed again to a 14. So 9, 17, 9, 14. This is the kind of alternating pattern that would tell you, okay, he'll run a 9 possibly, but it's rare on this kind of a situation for him to go to, let's say, a 6 or a 7 that might be required to win this race. So I think we've seen pretty much the three logical favorites, quote unquote. But now we go to the horse that I like the most, which is the rail horse, Benoit. Why do I like this horse? He ran three sprints, well-spaced. He was bet almost entirely in all of the races, and then they stretched him out, and here's what he did. Immediately went back to his prior top. So what's he saying? He's saying, I went from a sprint to a route. I ran actually a quarter point faster routing than I did sprinting. So the work that I've done to this point hasn't taken a toll on me. I am developing. I'm a coiled spring ready to do other things. And, you know, this time of year, horses usually don't go 12, 11, 10, 9. They usually go 12, 11, 11, 6. We can expect great things when horses turn the corner this time in their three-year-old year, and they tend to sustain that all the way through the three-year-old campaign. They're teenagers growing up, Steve, and they're getting better, faster, stronger. So for my money, I'm going to be most interested in Benoit in this, expecting him to do something. Admittedly, he's the fourth fastest horse in the race based on prior history, but his thoroughbred pattern is such that you can see development. And it's the kind of thing I like to invest in. Sadly, the line maker agreed with me and only made him 7-2. I was a little disappointed after we chose the race. I thought he'd be 6-8-1. But still, he's, let's say for thoroughbred sheep theory, this is a great example of the type of scenario you want to see as you're following three-year-olds. And this time of year, it's perfect.
You certainly agree with a lot of the things that you introduced here. And one added statistical or data point that Jerry Brown has added in recent years to thoroughgraph information is the thorough pattern. And what that is for those that are looking right underneath the performance figures, you know, basically the PPs, the thoroughgraph style PPs, you'll see thorough pattern. And Jerry based this on performances that horses have made, in this case 217 starts is the database. Horses that are coming in their last three efforts, a top, and then a pairing of the top, and then another pair. And you can see what that means. When Benoit broke his maiden with the 12, that established the top in his second career start, and then it basically paired up. That means ran within a point of either way of the established top, and then he did it again. Well, what has happened to the other 217 starts where horses have had that same series of efforts? And 27% of the time, they run yet another new top, or in this case, a new top. 42% of the time, they'll pair up. So you add those numbers together, you can anticipate that two-thirds of the time, a horse like Benoit coming into this spot is going to run that figure 11 or better again. So the thorough pattern is very helpful, and it took me a while to start to incorporate it into my decision-making. That brings us to a horse that has got, in the four-horse, more Big Lee. This is a horse that has a couple of different things, Jeff, to my approach to thoroughgraph that is worth noting. You can see that in the recent starts, in the two allowances, more Big Lee has really lurched forward and has gotten down to a 9.5 as his top. And that sets him up potentially to run another top. And Jerry and Alan Benowitz and the guys that I learned from, there's two different things. Sometimes you latch onto a horse like this and say, you know, this horse is going to run big again, and he's 10-1. He's a closer as well, and he might get a little bit of enough of a setup. But then there's the other school of thought that I very frequently see Jerry caution about, a horse that's already done a lot of developing just to get to the 9.5. So you kind of have to weigh both factors. Is there more development? Is there another forward move? At 10-1, that's the kind of price you want to take the chance that there's more development. And even if he just pairs up again, the 9.5, he's competitive in here, and he's a late runner. There's probably a chance he could at least be second or third. And so this is the kind of horse in Third Graph that I will frequently utilize in one manner or another, either as a key horse potentially or at the very least as an underneath horse at a price.
Yeah, I agree. Truly, I agree with all points that you've raised, not only the thorough pattern for Benoit, but on More Big Lee, how can you fault his development? But I err on the side of less is more at this time of year, and yet this horse might be dismissed entirely. This could be a 15-to-1 shot, so he is the kind of horse you're definitely going to want to throw into exotics, etc. And if he moves forward or even pairs up, as you said, you might have a 15-to-1 winner. So I think the race, the sheets have helped us identify the two points of interest in the race and potentially how we can make some money and get some value. And by the way, the other thing that I need to point out, one reason I globbed onto the sheets so early on is that the question to me always as an agent was, how do I quantify when horses lose ground, when the track is fast and the track is slow? It's really daunting, except when you get into Third Graph and the computer's doing it all for you. And the reason I bring that up is that Benoit's drawn in the rail. And one thing that the sheets have shown us time and time again is that saving ground is golden. So if Benoit can save ground the whole way around, and one of the other horses we've discussed earlier with ostensibly faster numbers is going 3 wide all the way, this horse could run a 10 and beat horses that run 7s because they're losing so much ground. And so even the post position is favorable for him here and might be as well for More Big Lee. So agree with all your points, Steve.
There we go. All right. The first race on Saturday at Fairgrounds. It's the Crescent City Derby, 1/16 for state breds. And, at a glance, let's throw in one other data point that is a fairly new item at Third Graph. That's the race shapes. And essentially what Jerry did here was create a quarter mile figure, or at least a ranking of who is going to be on or near the lead in particular early in a race. And that comes into play in this spot too. It's another reason that I had some interest in More Big Lee, who I think has actually got some speed to stay close if he wants, obviously, but at the same time his best efforts have come sort of from mid-pack, and there's a couple of horses in here, notably Calibrachoa Kid, and there was one other, Cajun Karma. Both of those horses are coming off of sprints, and when you've got you got a route here, there's going to be added some added lick to my way of thinking. And so, looking at the race shapes, that's when I put together my PPs, Jeff, I print out DRF, I print out my Thoroughgraph sheets. I use the Thorough Quick, and then I print the race shapes, and I put the race shape in between the PPs and the figures. And that way, once I get an idea about how the race looks from PPs, I then take a look at a little added glance at the race shapes as the way Third Graph sees them, and then I look at the figures and the other data points that are germane. So a couple of ideas here. Benoit for Jeff from the rail at 7-2, maybe 4-1, and More Big Lee for me as at the very least kind of a reverse tri-key, a horse that's going to maybe clunk up at the very least for a share at a nice price. Let's talk about the Tom Benson. The Memorial goes as the 8th, and 1/16 for the fillies and mares on the turf, and we do know that they are going to take down finally those temporary rails here at the end of the meet, and so there's going to be more of that turf course to utilize after basically the whole season being limited to the to the outer rail, one of the crazier visuals you'll ever see on a turf course.
Right, and so this race had appeal for entirely different reasons in the first. This is not about developing horses. This is about who is the fastest racehorse, presumably on Saturday. These are, you know, they're mature mares. They've shown what they can do. Form cycles come into play, but basically the entire question is who's fastest? And the second question is who's coming into the race, you know, in the best form. So I love the race because the rail horse adventuring is a Brad Cox horse. It's gonna, she's gonna be well played, overplayed in my opinion. She's fast. And I would say it wouldn't surprise me if she ran third or fourth in the race, because there are at least three different mares in here who can run faster. If any of them fires, this filly's beat. And, you know, at 2-1 line, and I'm reckoning a typical Cox horse probably bet down even more, this is an ideal situation for Thoroughgraph where we can look for a bet against. So the history on her is she basically runs nice, solid 5.5s or 6s. Let's just use her as a 6. She's a 5-year-old mare, so development is over. She is what she is. So that's what we're going to count on. The second horse that I'm going to bring up about 5 horses in the race, Steve, so follow with me. The second horse is right next to her, New Boss. New Boss just ran a lot faster. She ran a 3.5 sprinting. But this is the classic scenario of something we talked about earlier, which is the bounce. She has a history of 11s and 12s, no trainer change, no nothing. All of a sudden, out of the blue, runs a 3.5. Occasionally, horses will sustain that, but for the most part, they will regress. You know, the thorough pattern would tell you she has a 67% chance of running an X. That is severe regression. To me, it's more like 100%. Because, as we mentioned earlier, horses just take a lot out of themselves. She ran her tail off. You know, God bless her for that. Now she's stretching out. It's going to be incredibly difficult for her to repeat that. And she's probably going to run somewhere up the track. That would be, you know, the thought here. So now let's go down to a couple other horses that do figure to play into things. The third one I'll talk about is Didia. She's coming off a long layoff for a trainer who really doesn't fire that well off of long layoffs. Really good, great trainer, in my opinion, solid guy. She ran a 4 back as a 4-year-old, and there is a little bit of development from a 4-year-old to a 5-year-old. So, you know, is it possible that she'd come off the bench and fire a 4? Well, mares often do that. But I'm going to kind of take a stance that she'll probably run, you know, a 5 or 6, and again, run a really good race, and have more interest in her 2 starts from now. But she, you know, so far is kind of tied with the fastest horse in the race. So now we'll go to what I think are the 2 horses we really need to pay careful attention to. The most logical winner in the race is She Can't Sing. This is just a fast race mare. And she is solid, she's consistent, she's proven herself at all sorts of distances. You know, Steve, she just shows up every time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to love this kind of a mare. She's 9-2. And if somebody said, Jeff, I'm just going to bet her, to heck with the horse you're about to point out next, I'd say, I can't fault it. She's going to be a tough cookie to beat. And Chris Block has done a great job in sequencing her races, gives her plenty of time. Mares usually require that. She's gotten it here. She's going to hit the board. Very, very, and she, by the way, she came off of a muddy race on the dirt, Sam Houston, which she's a better turf mare. So I think we can rely on her throwing a 3 or 4 out there. That's very good. But the fun play in the race is a mare called Island Hideaway. And the reason she's a fun play, and I love that Thoroughgraph does this and nobody else does this, is, let me set the stage. Here's a filly who's consistently ran 4s as a 5-year-old. And you just heard we're talking about, you know, 3s and 4s being pretty much the fastest in the race. The favorite, the Cox, is going to be lucky to run a 5.5 or a 6. So here's somebody, if she struts her stuff, can win the race. In her last start, she ran a 13. And so if you're a novice to Thoroughgraph, you're going, well, why in the heck would you be interested? That's a terrible regression. It's because she did that on a dead rail. And next to the thoroughgraph number is a big fat X. And you were talking earlier about how the temp rail is now down at fairgrounds. There was some, if guys were watching races at fairgrounds, there was some funky race riding going on as the rail was dead there. And she was basically in quicksand at the beach while she was trying to race somebody who was right in the tide line and in the superhighway. She had no shot in that race. It's a total throwout. So at 15 to 1, if this mare can get back to that 4, she's in the picture and she can win. And that's the kind of value that I like in thoroughgraph. Between the two horses we just talked about, between She Can Sing and Island Hideaway, we're not talking about bet off the board favorites. We're talking about somewhere between moderate to even heavy long shots that can make a guy a lot of money. And so to put it another way, if 15 to 1 holds up, will this mare win 1 out of 15 times? You're damn right she will.
Well, and
so now, Steve, what did I miss?
You know, it's been such a funny season when it comes to the grass at fairgrounds. And I was there for Risen Star Day. When it came to, particularly horses on the front end, I thought that, that's where I want horses that, that were in the race flow. She Can't Sing is... And Block is really good. If she gets into into gear here, and I think adventuring obviously from the rail is going to go. She should get a very nice kind of stalking trip. There mm-hmm. Tommy Proctor brings that horse from Florida, Gather As You Go, the Curlin mare. She's a pace factor, and so it kind of feels like She Can't Sing. The race absolutely goes through her, and then you fold in the Fig strength and the consistency. It just feels like she's a very good lean, and some people might get dissuaded off of the two dirt efforts. She did win one of them, actually, the Chalukie last November. So she's second off the layoff here after going to Houston and getting a graded stake placement on the dirt to add to her, her nice resume. So I don't have to go very far past She Can't Sing, to be honest. I'm a huge Nacho Correas fan, and, the layoff doesn't bother me with Didia. Orpin, 5-year-old, I think there's a lot to like there. 3 to 1, you kind of grudgingly accept it. Those are kind of my two. I didn't see anything fancy or thrilling. I understand the thought process on Island Hideaway for sure. But I don't want to say I'm chalky here, but 8-6 for me in here.
There you go. And by the way, I think something's working, because already I see I'm getting emails from guys that have gone to Thoroughgraph, gotten their sheets, and as part of that, there's some introductory stuff, and my email address is included in there. People have questions. So to all the people that are listening and have questions, give me a little while. I'll get back to you. This is great. This is what we hope for.
There you go. Every week at Thoroughgraph, there'll be a couple of races, and get the sheet sent to you. We'll walk you through it. This is sort of an expanded version of the Christmas bonus that Jerry's done for years, which I always tell people to avail themselves of, free sheets for a week, and it starts with opening day at Santa Anita every year. And the sheets are expensive, but literally any day you use them, it'll take exactly one play to pay for it and then some.
Yeah.
There's so many. We'll try to pick races each week that kind of widen your understanding. We'll look at maiden races and explain the information that you've heard me talk for years about. The pedigree statistics and the sibling statistics that are right there to help give you an indication of a maiden. It's probably the toughest part of multi-race wagering is figuring out confusing maiden groups. There are hints. Some of my absolute best scores have come with, you know, maidens that Thorograph had information that you couldn't find anywhere else.
I'm with you, and I'm astounded. I always say that people don't take full advantage of the lower left and the upper right, which are the two breeding areas of the sheets, on the sire side and on the dam side. And sometimes, how great is it when you see a horse who's had three sprints, and then you saw the, both the sire and the dam explode when they went two turns?
Exactly.
And it's quantified, the numbers there. You know, you see 12, 12, 12 sprinting, and then six is going two turns.
Yep.
Bingo, this is what I'm, this, so I'm with you, man.
The time is now. That's the, you're always asking. Yeah, there's things. There's so many things. But also, you, for those that are going to Thorograph.com for the first time, there's countless tidbits of information, including you know, Jerry's questions that you ask yourself when you're handicapping. You know, why is this horse in this race, and what is this horse doing? You know, what does this horse have to run to win, and try, you know, kind of back ending your handicapping and your wagering thought process. There's the Ask the Experts message board, which you can float ideas or ask questions, and there's a whole community of Thorograph users that'll answer. I've been doing that at Derby Trail forever as well, and you know, you can use Thorograph on Twitter and ask questions there. We're all trying to help people win, and Thorograph is all you need to win, as the saying goes.
There you go.
Jeff, thank you, and enjoy the weekend. We'll connect next week.
Thanks, Steve, and I will be looking forward to it. Good luck to everybody this weekend.
Jeff Franklin, everybody, known to many as Crafty, and he's been around the game forever. And, in fact, I see where I do see Smokin' Joe, another jock agent comrade of Jeff's. He knows Jeff going back. I will say this, Joe. Talking about Hernandez. I think that's Colby Hernandez that was riding Magnum, not Brian, right? I'm pretty sure. Looking at that first race, yeah, it's BJ. It's Brian Hernandez on Benoit, and it was Colby that had ridden Magnum in this case. That's the card is very good, and I'm focused. You know, we're obviously tomorrow going to focus on the stakes, but the maiden, there's a bunch of maiden specials as well. So I hope you enjoyed that. We'll do more of these every week to help you learn more about Thorograph and how to use it. I think Michael may have to. I think Michael Blowen. I think we're in trouble with Michael. let me get to Paul, because this is the window that we wanted to get Paul Umbrello in. Let me get Paul in, and Michael Blowen, who I know listens daily. Michael, we're going to leave you in the green room, as the saying goes. All right. I'm sorry. We'll get. Well, Michael's news will keep, I think. There's some exciting things happening at Old Friends. There always are. But we'll talk to Michael. We'll talk to Michael next week when I'm in Gulfstream and things will be a little bit calmer. Happy to welcome Michael next week. Paul Umbrello joins us from Massachusetts and the Massachusetts Thoroughbred Breeders Association. Paul, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
No, my pleasure. And I got to find out more about, we've been running this commercial and was approached by the Mass Breeders and I was happy to do it. Tell everybody about where this money's coming from. It reminded me of Virginia a few years ago. And, you know, you're trying to keep the breeding community alive in Massachusetts.
Correct. So a little history, as you may know, or your viewers may or may not know, obviously, Suffolk Downs in 2014, you know, decided to close the doors, sell the property. It was far valuable. But we, the horsemen, I also serve as the executive director for the New England HBPA. We ran and sponsored the festivals through 2019, just that, to help the breeders run mass-bred stakes races, keep, you know, the local New England horsemen alive and going until finally 2019, you know, the deal was, the sale of the deal was made, and hence they started demoing. So we, as the HBPA, are still actively looking and hoping to pursue and find land in Massachusetts to bring thoroughbred racing back. Of course, if we can do that, that will help, obviously, our mass breeding farms, you know, our breeding program. But it's been very challenging, and out of all the states in the country, Massachusetts is probably the most challenging, because to find land and its value, you know, in Massachusetts and 100 plus acres, or in towns, and unfortunately towns, the way the law is written, you know, requires a 2/3 town vote, which is a very tough nut to crack for us. So that's been our struggle, my struggle in working and trying to get investors to come into town, which of course sports betting was just passed. So that hopefully is another incentive. We worked legislatively to have that language put in to protect a racetrack investor that invests in a racetrack to be guaranteed a license. So that's a little quick history. Now about the breeding program, and yeah, well, it's said we're the best kept secret. We do actually have, and that's what we're trying to get the message out to folks out there, and be more proactive, is we do actually have the best program in the country, and I'll try to step through and explain it. But that Racehorse Development Fund through gaming, which again, the horsemen were instrumental in 2011 writing that gaming act, just that, to protect the horsemen, because we know, like in this industry today, anything gaming related just takes away from us. So we have to protect all the horsemen out there across the country. We just have to get better and smarter at that, and continue that push. So the breeding program itself and why it's the best in the country. So through that Racehorse Development Fund, 16% is allocated to the breeders, and that includes standardbreds and thoroughbreds. Unfortunately, and I also serve on the horse racing committee with the commission, I'm wearing too many hats lately, we have to, by statute, kind of defend why we deserve X percentage. Unfortunately, today that split is 70-30, and that's what we're fighting to bring those numbers back up and offering these type of programs. So, you know, to cut to the chase, we offer now any mass bred foal. And the definitions for mass bred foal is obviously if you bring in a mare by October 15th and drop the foal in Massachusetts, you know, obviously that following year, you're a mass bred registered horse and you go through the registration process with MDAR. Now, the other way you can do it is you could bring in your brood mare from Kentucky and, you know, bring it at the beginning of the year, drop that foal on a farm, and the only caveat is you have to breed back that broodmare to a mass stallion. And for a mass stallion, if people are interested, they could bring their stallion in by February 1st of that breeding year, and then you would be a registered mass stallion. So if you had out there, and I'll get into really the crutch of all this, the bonus money. But if you had a stallion out there and you want to bring it to a farm and put it on a farm, you know, before February 1st, and you've got a broodmare and, you know, you have so many options to either bring a broodmare in and drop it, breed your own stallion, or breed back to another stallion. But, you know, here comes the kicker. As a mass bred horse, and if you finish first, second, or third, 25% of purse earnings go to the breeder. 30%, and this will get a little dicey, used to go to the owner. And what we recently did to help those breeders out there is we split it 20% to the owner and 10% to a developer. And what that 10% means, and I know it's a lot to take in, is we now classify that developer as the owner of record for the horse's first start. Because what we saw in years past, there became a feeding frenzy of mass breds being claimed because as the owner, you could get a 30% bonus. So what we did to help with the breeders, you know, and those investing, we said, all right, look, if your horse is in a mating claiming and you start the horse and the horse gets claimed from you, let's say, you know, for $20,000, you as the owner will get your 10%. However, you as the owner of record, meaning you could be the breeder, by the way, so now you're getting 45%
right,
bonus.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You're going to get the residuals, the incentives we offer for the life of that horse racing. So that right there is a kicker to incentivize people to come in, breed. And now the other thing to help our mass bred farms, we also came up with as a breeder, now theoretically your horse has more value. So if I, which I admit, I'm on the breeder's board, but I'd love to, I don't own a farm, and myself particularly a breeder, but I'm involved buying mass breeds, but here's that kick. So now let's say you're breeding a farm, you know, you have a horse on a farm and you drop personally four foals. You want to keep two. You want to sell two. Well, in the way in the past that, you know, I buy the horse from you, horse is okay, but, you know, I have to run him in a maiden 10. I could lose the horse. So I just put that whole investment of buying that foal all that time, getting the track. So what we now do is we protect, you know, you, the developer, as we call it, but also the breeder. Because now we feel that the breeder could possibly offer more horse for that that type of incentive, right? So we came up with that. So now that's broken out. And then as the stallion owner, if you had a stallion, you get 15% on the stallion award owners. And the caveats also are there is a 5%, I'm sorry, a $5,000 cap per race per category. So think about it. If you were the breeder,
yep.
You were the owner developer,
yep.
And you happen to be the stallion owner, right? I got to add up quickly. I should have been prepared. Sorry. 45, 55, 70% in bonuses, right? And unlike other programs, like you said, you can run anywhere in the country.
Anywhere in the country.
In the country.
What about Canada too? No, because you were running it at Fort Erie. You had the mass bred races.
Correct. So that, believe it or not, kind of was a sticky wicket because the money never went to Canada. We dispersed the funding directly from our account, so there was a little controversy on that. But, yes, North America would be included.
Okay. All right. So wherever you want to run. Obviously, Paul, the key here is having stallions and having, you know, a viable program, essentially. How many boarding facilities and such are there in Massachusetts, and how many foals are we talking about the last couple of years?
Yeah, so we have registered farms that we know of with the breeders. Sadly, you know, again, without racing, and that's what we're trying to bring back, that gives the confidence of people to, you know, reinvest back in the business. Farms are dropping like hotcakes because the land, sadly, in Massachusetts is far more valuable for that farm owner breeder to sell it out for development, you know, for folks that don't realize it, especially those long timers out there. So that's one of the reasons why we're trying to, with these type of programs, get even outside investors to come in and buy a farm, right? Preservation of open space, preservation of the breeding program. And the same thing, our foal numbers are down, and it's why we're kind of now pushing this campaign more and more, was to get those numbers up so we can show that there is an interest. And I know since the last couple of months, we just had a breeders meeting. A lot of folks are now doing, I'm hearing more and more, we're trying to track it, that more people from out of state are coming in to, you know, drop their foals. So obviously drop your foal, has to stay on the farm 2 weeks, and then, you know, ship it back out to Kentucky, Ohio, wherever you want to go. But you now become a registered mass bred, especially if you have, you know, maybe decent quality bred horse. Now, a couple other kickers. We also offer, because we are no longer running mass bred restricted stakes races like we did in Canada and
right.
other states to help the breeders, we're offering in lieu a $10,000 supplement anywhere you race out of state as well. And we pay out, you know, right through 60, 20, 10, 5, 3, 2, all the way out to sixth place, a $10,000 supplement. So, you know, if people that are following, we have one of the best passports out there, Dr. Blarney, you know, who's running in Delaware, many other places, and obviously Mr. DiRico as an owner, breeder, developer, you know, gets to capitalize on those other incentives, and that's what we're trying to encourage people to come and invest in Massachusetts.
Well, that nobody walks around luckier than Joe DiRico.
Yeah. It's that, you know, and some people come under criticism, but, you know, he spends the money, he makes the investment, you know, he's dedicated to the industry, and he breeds quality horses. Now, the other thing, I'll kind of tip folks off, and I'm trying to wait for final approval, we've been working this one, is we're looking to do, as you mentioned earlier, with Virginia, an accredited program.
Right.
Which is going to be tremendous. So now if you have, you know, a New York bred, PA bred, whatever it is, you can now come to a farm in Massachusetts, keep the horse on the farm for 3 months, and you now can have, as I call it, dual citizenship. You know, your license is going to say New York / Mass, Mass certified, and you'd still be eligible for some of those incentives. Obviously, you wouldn't get the Breeders Awards, you wouldn't get the Stallion Awards, but you'd still be eligible for that 30% of the owner-developer, which, again, is just, you know, as far as I know, unheard of.
Well, the accreditation, that program, that's sort of a hybrid between Virginia and Delaware. It's more of a certified style. The program in Virginia, what Debbie Easter and the Virginia Equine Alliance did, and Frank Petromallo, that kept Virginia viable. It kept farms open as boarding facilities. And now with everything that's happened at Colonial, those farms are stocked to the gills. There isn't even guys like our friend Woodbury Payne. Woodbury has got a waiting list to, you know, to develop horses. He is full up. Every farm is full up. There's actually people, you know, building new ones. And, you know, Paul, I would think, I mean, I grew up in Hartford, outside of Hartford, and I know Massachusetts pretty darn well. There's got to be, from Springfield heading west, there's plenty of places for farmland and paddocks and for having and I was shocked when Sturbridge, the project in Sturbridge, I was shocked that got turned down.
Yeah, so great question, and that's been the dilemma as I've been getting more and more gray hairs over the years scouring Massachusetts north, south, east, west. And it's what some of the investors out there are getting frustrated over. To find just that 100-plus acres in Massachusetts, unfortunately, is going to be a board of selectmen, town board, right? Which, because of the current statute out there, and the town isn't approved for gaming, you need a two-thirds town vote. And honestly, going into Sturbridge, you know, and it's a message we try to let people know, out there is, you know, we got to start small, right? You know, maybe with the festival racing and build it up. No way we're going to be able to turn the key and offer 60 days of racing, sadly, and expect a bunch of horsemen, even local horsemen, to just pack up and come back to Massachusetts without, you know, the program up and running. But unfortunately, Sturbridge, same thing. We thought we had that wrapped up, and one of the selectmen going into the vote quoted that, you know, misquoted an individual that, you know, we were going to run 100 days or more. And you could just see, I was sitting in the cafeteria watching it on a big screen, and you could just see that kind of just changed the whole attitude of everybody, because it just panicked them. And I don't get it out there. I mean, I get it, you know, gaming, taboo, But we're trying to get the message out. I'm sure you know, and your listeners know, is that, you know, this industry, and I go to the state house many times writing letters. It's an unbelievable industry where, if you think about it, right, all the jobs we support out there, the preservation of open space, the breeding farms, the hay farms, right? And you can look at those big corporations and the jobs they have, techie admin and outsourcing. And I always kid, we don't outsource jockeys and trainers overseas. You know, I got a list in front of me that just you can think about. Your farriers, your vets, your interns, feed, crane, ambulance, state police, you know, your state officials. It's A to Z with the jobs that we support for this industry. And, you know, when we build it, those roots go in the ground and we're not going anywhere. But it's just, it's got that tarnish. And, you know, people talking about, oh, I don't want gambling in my town. I'm like, you got the lottery. You got scratch tickets.
It's ridiculous.
You got Keno.
It's a joke.
By the way, I'm standing in your town and I'm betting Santa Anita right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
With sports betting, I just played the Celtics. I mean, we have to, instead of in this industry, my personal opinion is, instead of getting on the defense, we now have to start to get on the offense, right? Like any industry, I'll admit, there's some bad seeds out there, right? But not everybody's a bad seed. And that's the image we have to start changing and push for, to let people understand, really, you know, a lot of the aftercare. Part of our goal of having a racetrack built, and we want enough acres, is just that. We want to have a retirement aftercare program where we could rescue horses as part of the racetrack. I mean, this is all the ideas and visions we have in incorporating this type of development, because we do care about that horse, that thoroughbred. So,
well,
but you're right. So we investors get, going back to your comment, a little wary about that two-thirds town vote. If it was a majority, would have a better chance, but that two-thirds town vote just scares people.
Now, there were also some the animal activist activity that was pronounced and, you know, came in and tarred the whole effort. Anyway, the good news is this money is not going anywhere. It's it's part of the firmament, and horse breeders and owners can take advantage of it. And I wanted to make sure that we had a chance to talk. Massbreds.com has got all this information, and we'll talk again. Paul, I appreciate you doing this.
No, I can't thank you enough for having me on the phone and letting folks hear our story out there. Really appreciate your time.
Not at all. Massbreds.com, these incentives, and you know what I'll do? I'll get Joe. I'll get DeRico on, and we'll let Joe talk about how lucrative it's been. That I will do that, all right?
Thanks, man. All right.
Thanks,
you
Paul.
You have a good day. Appreciate your time.
Not at all.
Bye-bye.
Paul Umbrello from Massbreds.com. I wanted to get Rich Eng in here. We got about 2 minutes to talk to Rich, and I think Rich, you there?
Yeah, hi Steve.
Rich, real quick, because we went 3-1, you and I, last week with the over-unders. We pushed everybody, I think, in the right direction, and the people that played unders, in fact, the whole opening weekend of the NCAAs, I think, got pretty healthy. What are we doing here these next couple of days?
Well, I'll tell you what, I know we get short on time, so I'll just give out a few picks, games that I like. As far as today, the first game I like is Florida Atlantic, plus the 5.5 against Tennessee. Tennessee plays great bully ball, but they still have trouble scoring the ball. I think FAU is a more well-rounded team, so I like FAU plus the 5.5. Another game I like today is the UConn Huskies are playing their desert basketball of the season. There are a lot of fours out there, but there are also some 3.5. So I suggest your listeners price shop, try to get that minus 3.5 against Arkansas. So that's a second game that I like, Steve. And as far as tomorrow, since I won't be on the air tomorrow, a couple of games. I really like the Princeton Tigers getting the 10 points against Creighton. I know Creighton's a real popular pick, but I tell you what, if you watch their game against Baylor, they played a near-perfect game. They were 22 for 22 from the free throw line. The guard, Ben Nemhard, who averages 12 a game, scored 30. And so they trounced Baylor. But it's hard to play perfect games back-to-back, so I think Princeton plus the 10 is a live play tomorrow.
Very nice. All right. So Florida Atlantic, 5.5, and I'll be in Boca tomorrow. UConn, -3.5 against the Archog, and that won't sit well with our Hot Springs listeners. And the Tiger, the Tiger plus 10 over the Blue Jays. Rich, I appreciate it. We will talk more next week.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
Rich Eng for Pro Pick, everybody, and we're out of time. Just too much. The Dean Dorenzo piece, though, was certainly worth hanging around. Could not pull up from what we learned from Dean. So I apologize to Rich a little bit here and Michael Blowen, who we will get to next week. Tomorrow, weekend preview. Brought to you by Twin Spires, and should be a barn burner with everything going on at Fairgrounds, at Turfway, at Sunland, I guess at Maidan. I didn't notice. Did Marcus go? Is Marcus there? So we may not. He wasn't sure if he was going to go to. And I haven't, these days on Twitter, you don't see all the people you want to follow, or you can barely find them. All right. Thanks to Dean Dorenzo and Bill Gallo, Jeff Franklin and Thurgraph, Paul Umbrello, MassBreads.com, and Rich A. All right. Enjoy the basketball, enjoy the racing, and we will preview the big weekend from here at OBS. Tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.
At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in